Welcome to the Secrets in the City podcast, where we turn secrets of our past into lifelong lessons. My name is Dr. Catherine Nisko, and I'm the proud host of this podcast series. I love science, and I love how it can help people. So when I'm not interviewing incredible individuals here on Secrets in the City, I spend my time creating and delivering science-based programs that help people and teams perform at their best. Because in my experience, understanding the science of why we do what we do is the quickest way to change what we do. So with that in mind, let me introduce my next guest, Sherry Lee Biggs, who appears to have the ultimate insta-perfect life. About 10 years ago, she gained international fame after winning the coveted title of Miss Universe Australia. She's been the weather presenter at Channel 9 Perth since 2014, and has recently been announced as a star in the upcoming season of Celebrity Apprentice. In this episode, Sherry Lee shares how things are rarely what they seem. She dives deep into what was really going on behind the scenes while placing in the top 10 for Miss Universe World. From disordered eating, something I can personally relate to social anxiety, to the crippling judgment and harassment she faced in the spotlight. Eventually, she came to the realization that in her industry, her face and her body were just a product. But what I really hope you gain from this episode are the tools Sherry uses to bounce back from these challenges and her newfound approach to authentic social connection, a method that involves putting down the mask of perfection.
You do really need to stop and I guess have a sense of gratitude or just self-reflection and appreciate where you've come as well. And I think that can be really hard because, as you said, there's always this next level.
We also talk about self-identity in relationships, that is, sticking by who you are rather than who you think you should be. And we discuss the role of having a purpose in life.
I don't want to be on this great chase as well, you know, looking for something that might not be there. You know, I think it is about enjoying the journey as well.
I'm truly excited for you to experience the same joy I felt from interviewing Sherry Lee. She's a radiant beacon of warmth and love. In fact, Eddie, one of my chihuahuas, did not leave her side the entire podcast. Also, make sure to stay tuned until the very end of the podcast where I challenge you to a 24-hour task for personal growth. Without further ado, please help me welcome the wisdom that is Sherry Lee. So I know you're looking through the secrets. So can you share with us what secret you're going to select?
So the secret that I connected most with was I've lost my mojo and drive.
Okay.
Yeah.
Why did that one jump out at you? I know a few of them did, but why was that one significantly different than others?
I think because it's something that's happened to me many times along the way. And I guess it's something that I'm not really happy to admit publicly, but I've promised that I'm going to be open today.
It's so we're already going into your secret. Wow. Yeah, there you go.
I think it's probably, I guess the reason why I want to talk about it is because I want people to understand that it's okay to feel that way, to feel that you have lost your mojo and drive and, you know, that you don't need to have it all the time. That's something I'm kind of making peace with, I guess. I've had multiple times in my life. I think, you know, from little. So I started modelling when I was 16 and, you know, moved overseas, well, interstate by 17. I was out of home.
That's early.
Overseas at 18. It was all pretty fast forward, you know.
And when you say overseas, do you mean like Europe, North America?
Germany, London. Yeah, it was an amazing experience. But I think it's such an interesting time for a girl. Now looking back, I'm like, oh my God, how did my mum let me go? Like she hated it, but you know, she was good in letting me sort of go on my path. But I guess for me, you know, I was kind of thrust into this world that was really adult and everything just happened for me. You know, I don't want to say I fell into things because I've always worked hard. I've always seen something that I've wanted and worked hard and got there. But I feel like my life has been a series of opportunities, and maybe not necessarily something, you know, like I haven't mapped it out and you know, studied for many years to get to X or, mm-hmm. you know, and mm-hmm. it's been this conscious decision. It's almost been like these opportunities that have popped up and I've just grasped it and gone with it. And it's been amazing. It's been a wild ride. Mm-hmm. But I think there's times where, you know, I've got to a point where I just completely lose my mojo and drive. I'm always quite intuitive, I'd mm-hmm. like to think. You know, even if I don't know what's coming next, I know where I need to be. You know, like I know, okay, I feel like I need to move to this city, or I, you know, need to look for this opportunity or something like that. But, yeah, there were points in my life where I think also when I was just run down and had just been working so hard that I just had nothing left to give. Mm. And, it, you know, it got to some pretty dark points in my life as well. And, you know, I'd say that there was a point after Miss Australia that I was just so drained that I didn't want to leave the house. I literally stayed inside my house. I was physically scared of going outside. So
can I ask what were you scared of, if you can take us back there? So you would have been how old at that time?
I was 21 at the time.
21. So this is when you need to be living and partying and doing stuff.
It had just been such – so it was toward the end of my year as Miss Australia, and it was just so busy, so full on. I was thrust into the media. I had some bad media experiences. And I just think, you know, as a girl of that age, this is when you're learning about yourself, and you should be free of judgment at that point. But this was just a year of intensity, if I could put it that way. You know, it's an intense work experience. It's intense mentally. It's intense just in every way possible with your body image. And I was just so drained by the end of it that – when I was going through this period where I just didn't want to leave the house, everything was too much. It just seemed like, you know, facing people, facing a shop assistant. I felt, I can't even, God, it's really going back now, but like just, I felt like people were judging me. Even when I left the house, I was scared to eat outside of the house. Right. It was just such a weird phase, and I just, you know, I had all these people around me, my partner at the time, my family back here in Perth, all throwing support at me. But even some, like, I didn't even tell them kind of what was going on. I hid it in a weird way. It sounds strange because I'm confined to my home and I'm hiding it from my partner. But I just would literally be couch bound all day, almost punishing myself in a way that, you know, like I wouldn't get up. I wouldn't, not that you need to look great every day, but I wouldn't even put nice clothes on or, you know, put a face of makeup on or anything. I just felt like I deserved to be this, I don't know, like mess of a person. And it took me so long to come out of that. And it was thankfully the support of my family and friends, especially a lot of the women around me. I think I'm really lucky to have some really strong women. My mum, I've got two beautiful sisters, and they're just really raw, open, honest people. Mm-hmm. And it felt like a safe place eventually to, you know, to share that and have that support, and just slowly rebuilding myself, I guess, you know, back to where it should be. But even in that time, I still had public events and, you know, would still have to go to things as Miss Australia, or, you know, soon after as ex-Miss Australia, and start forging my career in media. But it almost felt like I was putting on a face. Like it was, you know, if I could push myself to go out, I just had this puppet, a version of myself that I would just, you know, step into and come home and just feel absolutely drained because I was literally using every ounce of energy to get through that.
Wow. I'm listening to this and I can relate so strongly to it, because it sounds to me like you were living two lives a double life. On the outside, you were this, oh my God, I wish I was her. She's traveling everywhere. She's Miss Australia. She's getting all these opportunities. But on the inside, you were just thinking, get me away from this.
100%. And I think it's important for women especially and young girls to know that sometimes that is the case. And I guess why I'm feeling now that I want to share this and I want to be raw and honest. I guess you could say that it was a double life that I was leading. I would literally leave the airport and just be in tears. I would cry for days. I was just, but I think it's also a message about looking after yourself. I wasn't looking after myself in that time and I didn't know my boundaries. I didn't know my, no thank you. I'm actually too tired this week. I've flown to 7 different cities in the same week. Enough, you know.
Yeah. It's really, really interesting to hear because I think you're pointing out something so important, especially for the younger generation, that it seems like they always have to be on because social media, you always have to have your skin looking poreless, you know, your waist looking tiny, like everything always just has to be on. Like,
exactly.
Stage ready.
Yeah, well, you know? That's, and I think that, you know, probably through my generation and the generations following me, there is this need to achieve suddenly, you know. It's not that slow achievement that maybe, you know, our parents were accustomed to, that you study, you know, you get this done, you probably stay in one or two jobs. Now, you know, you've got to have this baller job, you've got to have a side hustle, you know, you've got to be doing all these things, be super fit, entering this competition and that, and it's just exhausting. And I think we really need to take the steps and make it okay to have those boundaries and to stop and to be happy with where you're at. And, you know, I think that's really hard sometimes, especially now with social media, just this constant feed of what people are doing, this highlights reel of what people are doing. And, you know, I've got to points where I've had to, people that I'm friends with in the media or, you know, that I work with, or, you know, when I see them, probably not now, but when in the past, when I have been feeling down, I've had to mute them, or, you know, which is strange to say, because these are people that I love and I'm happy for, but at the time I just couldn't take it. And it just, I think it's really important for us to make that okay.
It sounds to me that you hit a threshold, and you hit that threshold and you just, now at you know, the ripe age of 30, you know, versus 21, you're saying, you know what, I need to do me, boo. And this is so resonant to me because literally about 2 days ago, I had a chat with my partner and I just said, I'm at that threshold and I can feel, because I've had depression a few times before and I could feel it creeping back in. And last weekend was quite harsh. And there was one day that I didn't wake up until 11 and I just knew all the signs.
Yeah.
And I was right at that breaking point. And eventually I said to him, I need to change. I need to change the way my routine is. I need to get more sleep. I need to watch my diet. I can't go out. I need to remove myself from those kinds of atmospheres, drinking, whatever the case may be. Not that we drink a lot, but I need to put myself first and foremost. And it's amazing that in literally 4 days later, I now am starting to feel myself. But this is so, it's so funny that you're talking about this because it was so, what's happening to me right now.
Yeah,
right now.
And I think that's the beauty of getting older as well. You know, everyone's so scared of 30. Oh my God, I haven't got anything done before I'm 30. But I felt such a shift in probably 29 turning 30. And you do recognize those signs and you do put yourself first. And it's just so important because no one's there to look after you, you know, like as much as you expect your partner or your, and it's great that you've got that support. And, you know, I've got people in my life, but at the end of the day, the only person who can change it is yourself. And, and I'm not here sitting here, you know, telling you that I've got it all sorted, you know, that at 21 it was like this, but now that I'm 30, it's great. I literally a couple of weeks ago, I was in tears again and I felt, you know, that horrible feeling coming in of, you know, I'm not where I need to be.
So it sounds like there's always another level.
There's always another level. And I think just, you know, that pause and stop. When you have been busy, I find it does come in after I've been really busy or yeah, maybe partying a little bit and that sort of thing off these big highs. And I've just filmed Celebrity Apprentice and that was a huge high.
Yeah.
And coming back to my normal life, and I love my job and, you know, I love where I live and what I'm doing right now. But there is that moment where you're like, oh, do I need a change? Am I doing enough? Like, this was great, but, you know, do I need more than this? And you do really need to stop and I guess have a sense of gratitude or just self-reflection and appreciate where you've come as well. And I think that can be really hard because, as you said, there's always this next level that you should be reaching. So I journal a lot and I think you'd be proud of me.
Yes, absolutely.
But I think that's been something and it's I've done it on and off throughout my life, but that's always been a huge part of that self-reflection and one of those things where I feel that horrible feeling creeping in where I can find myself again or at least just get all of it out on a piece of paper because it just that consuming loop of, you know, horrible thoughts and self-talk and it can just be all consuming. So to get it out on paper and I find I start sort of problem solving while I'm doing it, you know, I'll just be, and God, there's swear words in that journal. Like you have never seen in your life. Like I don't, some of the things people have been called in there. I'm teasing.
Love it. Where can we get these journals?
I know I'm terrible with mine as well. I leave them everywhere and I'm like, one day I should start using code names or something. But I find during that, while self-reflecting, I solve the problem and I know what I need to do or, you know, I've said something nice to myself about it or given myself the permission to feel okay about not doing something or not being where I want to be right now.
Mm-hmm. And it's funny that you're saying about writing because that's what this podcast is all about. It's all about the secrets that I've collected over the years, the thousands and thousands of secrets. And the analogy or the metaphor that I always use, it's kind of like holding an uncomfortable bloating fart. And we're all trying to be like suck in our stomachs and, you know, walk around with skinny jeans and this and that. And we're holding, it's like those funny commercials where you see a woman holding in her fart the entire time and then she gets in the door and she just lets her rip and that's what self-reflection and specifically writing and that's what therapy is all about, enabling us to make sense of all this rumination that's going on in our brain. But you don't necessarily need someone to absorb that or to reflect back on you. You can do it just with a piece of paper yourself. And a pen.
And I think that's just interesting hearing you say that. Something I guess that's come up for me over time is when, and you know, this happens to people personally, but what I've found being in media, I started not being able to trust people. And I think that's at that time where, you know, I fell apart and I didn't want to leave the house and my sense of self was so broken. I part of that was that I felt like I couldn't trust people in telling them how I felt. And just in that way that I felt like people wanted something from me, you know, and that secrets were told and suddenly my network became a bit smaller. And that's something that my mum actually always said to me, you'll know who your true friends are in the worst times in your life and also in the best times of your life, because then that, you know, that green monster comes out. And it played out in my life. And I think that's where I fell into journaling and I've always gone to counseling just as even if I'm feeling okay, just to check in and start sort of mapping out where I want to go or if I, you know, want to achieve something. And I've found those two things really vital in my life and just having those strong women in my life, which has actually directed me into working with a charity here in Perth, Dress for Success. So they were my chosen charity for Celebrity Apprentice. And they just do some fantastic work. And I think it just resonated with me. I'd been watching what they'd been doing for a few years, but then actually being involved, it's just, it's been an amazing experience. And they help women, you know, who maybe are coming out of domestic violence situations or have migrated here. There's language barriers, just helping women get into the workforce or back into the workforce. And for me, it just tied in so well with, you know, there was that time in my life where I needed support, and I felt like, you know, and I had quite a privileged life, you know, I've got a great family, I had a great job, amazing prospects in front of me, but I just had lost all self-confidence. So it just, I think, takes having those people around you, and some people don't, to take those steps forward and build that confidence in yourself to eventually do those things. So yeah, so I think in a way this has been kind of therapeutic for me as well to be doing some of this work. And yeah, I'm looking forward to what's ahead with them.
So it's interesting. That's kind of like where you're getting a bit of your mojo.
Yeah, exactly.
And the funny, so the word that's coming up for me a lot is trust. Trust is a massive one for you, because it sounds to me that you were thrown under the spotlight or into the spotlight, and then people were abusing your trust, because it's kind of like you can tell your secrets, but those secrets could be sold for someone else's benefit. That's sort of how it sounds like, in a way.
100%.
Yeah. So then we have this once bitten, twice shy sort of situation. You're put into this spotlight. You didn't choose. I mean, I don't think you chose your genetics. You just happen to be stunning. It's kind of like winning the lottery. I mean, that's sort of what it, you were thrown under the spotlight in a way. And it sounds to me that a lot of times that you were given these opportunities and you're like, well, might as well take them. But I don't know. And I'm going to ask this hard question. Do you actually really want it? Or was it just like, well, it's an opportunity, I better take it?
I don't think I ever felt like I was just forced to take it because it was there. But I have never, I guess, been someone, and this might be controversial because I feel like, you know, everyone has their thing that they want to do. I just never, I left school and, you know, I was good at a lot of things at school, but nothing really, you know, I used to dance a lot at school and I was quite good in academics, I was quite sporty, like I was arty. There were so many different ways that I could go, but nothing really stood out to me. And yeah, so I think my whole life was just those opportunities, but it was always, I don't know, it is a tough question. I think to an extent I'm a little bit spiritual in that way, that, you know, I feel like things come to you when they're meant to come to you. And that's how I've lived my life. That's how I've chosen to live my life. And yeah, it's just, it's led me on some incredible paths, and I have found somewhere where I'm very happy, you know, and that I'm really enjoying what I do. And I guess in those times though, when I, you know, talk about losing my drive and my mojo, it helps me refocus. It's almost like you have to get there to that point where you're questioning what you do, or you're questioning what it's about, to find that next opportunity. I don't know. That's just how I live my life. And I quite, looking back on it, I've enjoyed every moment, but there has been hard times in the mix of it as well.
And what do you think the differentiating factor is when you are feeling good about what's going on in your life, and then when it slips into that moment, oh, I could be doing more, I'm losing my mojo. What do you think are some of the traits or characteristics of your life? Is it something, for example, your relationships? Is it the amount of work that's pushed on you? Is it something else? Like, can you pinpoint perhaps what catalyzes or triggers moments of losing mojo?
It's been different at different times. I'd say my most recent one was probably the end of a relationship. That I've had two major breakdowns in relationships, and the last one just happened to be just prior to a pandemic as well. So, you know, throw a bit of a pandemic in there, it makes it pretty tough. But for whatever reason, coming out of this relationship, I felt like I had completely lost my identity. And, you know, we spoke about it earlier, but you know how you map things out in your life and you think, okay, well, this is where I'm meant to be. And that's how I felt in this relationship. And then it just all gets swept out from under your feet. And I don't know why. It's so strange that at the time I felt like it was so strange that it knocked the wind out of me so much. But it took me a long time to recover from it. But in saying that, I feel like this stuff is meant to happen. Like this is where you hit rock bottom and you learn so much more about yourself. And this was one of those things. So yeah, maybe I am a bit spiritual. Maybe I think the universe chucks these things at us to teach us. So to answer your question, that was one of the things that made me question everything. And I do get to those points in my life. I've accepted that that's just maybe part of who I am as a person, that I'm constantly sort of checking in with that and questioning where I am and what I'm meant to be doing. And I guess searching for that purpose in life. But at the end of that relationship, I just wanted to take off. I wanted to go overseas, I guess escape in a way. Yeah. And it just took the joy out of everything that I was doing. But getting to that point was just a real shock for me to actually question everything. Like, you know, it's one thing to question your relationship or whether you're lovable or whatever. But this was, you know, my career, where I was living, you know, what I was doing and who I was with and, you know, who I'm going to be with. And it was just before I was turning 30 as well. So it's, yeah, it's that, I guess that whole plan that you've got for your life, when it's taken away, it's like, what's left, you know, what's left behind it. So I guess to answer your question again, when I've got to those points, something has disrupted that plan, and it's made me question everything and kind of go to ground zero and start again. And I've come to realize that that's okay to do that, you know, and get to those points. And it's kind of almost like a forced like stock take, you know, like a forced
a reset. Sort of
like, yeah, exactly. And maybe because life does go quickly, you know, life's busy these days, and suddenly a year's gone by. I've been doing the weather for almost 8 years now. So
whoa.
I know, I'm getting old.
I've always wanted to do that, by the way.
Oh, you should come in and give it a crack.
I really want to.
It's tricky.
I know it's tricky. That's what I want to do, because I know you're looking at a monitor, but is it a green screen behind you?
No, so it's LED screens now.
Okay.
But it's all, so we've got two auto cues. I think the tricky bit is when you're still reading the auto cue, but you're looking to where you need to point.
Yes.
And that can get a little bit, yeah, it's a bit of a flow. I actually recently, they changed our screens to the other side. So this is almost a bit Zoolander. Like I always used to turn left, and then I suddenly had to start to, like, literally for 6 or 7 years. And then they're like, cool, turn right now. And I'm like, what?
What?
How does that work?
I can't read. I can't read. No, I can't believe that you've been doing it for that long.
Yeah.
So, you know, you were talking about purpose. Where is your purpose? Is it the Holy Grail?
I'd still say I'm searching for it in a way, but one thing that I have found in TV is I do love entertainment, and I love, I guess that's where I get where my artistic side comes in. I love this creation of something. I used to work in lifestyle TV, and I just think, you know, where weather is great is that it kind of is that where news meets lifestyle TV as well. And I get to go out and about and, you know, meet all these wonderful people, some incredible stories as well. My favourite thing is when I go to events where there's lots of little kids, and just the questions are just so beautiful, absolutely draining. You know, by the end of it, I'm like, oh, my God, how do school teachers do this? But it is just so gorgeous. And they just come straight out with it as well. Like, how much do you earn, you know? Why does lightning make the power go out? And you're like, oh, God, why does lightning make the
power? I know, sometimes kids make you feel a bit stupid because you're like, should I know the answer of that question?
They really get to the bottom of things. Mm. But, I'd say I'm probably still searching for – I mean – yeah, I'd say I'm still searching for my purpose as a whole, but I'm really happy with where I am. And I think that's all part and parcel of it. I don't want to be on this great chase as well, you know, looking for something that might not be there. You know, I think it is about enjoying the journey as well. And I think part of, I guess, what I love about my job is the interaction with people and the fast pace of it and the getting out and about and, you know, getting to know people and their incredible stories.
So this is really interesting, because 10 years ago you were hiding in a house and not wanting to communicate with people, you were sort of, you had walls up, if you want to put it that way, that you were trying to protect yourself, didn't want to even look at a storekeeper's face. Mm. And now, 9 years later, you're going out and seeking people's stories. Now, the interesting thing about that is no longer is the spotlight internally, you're turning the spotlight externally. You're starting to be curious in the world. And now, please correct me if I'm wrong, but that's how it seems to me.
Yeah, no, I think that's quite a, you're on point there for sure. Mm. Yeah, I do. I think it was also just, I guess, building my self-confidence up in that time as well.
Mm. And what was breaking your self-confidence during that time?
Judgment, I'd say. Mm. People's opinion. It was just something that I wasn't used to at all, that, you know, I'd be splayed front page of the newspaper having said something about someone that I never said, or it was really traumatic. And I think it just, you know, people just, and you would find this with social media as well, that people just feel like they can say whatever they want to say to you. And it, you know, you have feelings at the end of the day. Mm. And, you know, maybe if you are struggling with something, or you are feeling low, you're in one of those points where you feel like you've lost your drive and your mojo, to just hear a horrible comment from someone usually would be water off a duck's back. But to hear that comment can sometimes just really hit home. And yeah, it just makes you question everything. But I think where I was at 21, you didn't have that. You know, I came out of school and I had a great circle of friends. And yeah, but you know, everyone's sort of had a touch with bullying or comments from other kids and things. But I'd never had people maliciously tell me what it is they hate about me, that, you know, just really...
So very specific.
So specific, you know. Can like you even when, when I won Miss Australia, you know, why did I win Miss Australia? I'm South African. You know, what? People, even when I stutter on weather, people will say, you know, like that I don't know how to speak, or anything about my appearance, just, yeah, about weight. Weight was a huge one for me, because my weight fluctuates when I'm, you know, when I'm feeling low, or when I'm struggling mentally. And yeah, it can just really hit home. But I think, you know, where I am now is that I've built on my self-confidence, and I've kind of, I guess, thought about maybe put it back onto those people, not physically, I don't actually get back to them, but thinking about what's driven them to this point, what makes them feel that they have to comment about somebody they don't know, or, you know, and just say these god-awful things. Mm. So I think, yeah, that kind of gives me a bit of peace, where I just think about what horrible things these poor people are going through, to feel that that's okay, and move on with my life. And yeah.
I remember one person emailed me, this is years ago, they said, go back to Canada, you skinny anorexic bitch. Interestingly enough, just yesterday I got a comment, and I'll say that comment was really interesting, because I felt like, oh, well, I'm not anorexic anymore. And also it was a bit water off a duck's back, but I didn't realize until yesterday I got a comment. I'm just trying to find it now. That came through YouTube, and I'll read it out here. It was on an old cooking segment that I did. It was how to julienne carrots in seconds. Anyway,
I'm going to watch that after this. Know.
But the comment is, how slow can you be? LOL. Had to speed play you to get to the point. Nobody wants to see you dangling your head back and forth. Come on, JSTFU. I had to look that up and get to the point. Dorky face. And I'm not going to say the whole thing, but just shut the F up and get to the point. Now, it's interesting, because I laughed my butt off when I saw that comment. I was like, that's hilarious. And I love being a dork.
Yeah.
So I'm going to run with
You're
it.
You're like, great, thank you.
But it's sort of like getting back to what you said. When you're at a low point and you're kicked, you don't want to get up. Mm. When you're standing strong and high, if someone kicks you, you're just like, you know what? Let's talk about it.
Yeah.
So if we can dive into, you know, when you were saying when you're at your low points, your weight fluctuates. Is there any, have you ever experienced disordered eating or body image issues?
Oh, 100%. I'd say, yeah, I was a dancer as a kid as well. So I never officially had an eating disorder, or I was never diagnosed with anything. But I would say that my eating was definitely disordered. And, you know, it was obviously always a big focus. My family was great, though. Like, there was never any pressure in that sense. But, you know, I started modelling when I was 16 as well. And I remember when I went to Germany and came home, because it was freezing there. It was like midwinter. It was snowing, and I'd never been in snow before. Oh. And I was literally trudging around in like Vans with no socks on. So I very quickly, the Canadian looks at me.
Yeah, like, what?
So I was just not used to that sort of cold. So all I wanted to do was eat, you know. And I mean, I was skinny back then, and I, you know, probably put on a kilo or two, and eventually actually had to come home because I was too big to model. And so that's kind of traumatic as well.
A kilo or two.
Yeah. So it was.
And you were too big to model.
I was too big to model. So when I came home, I was asked if, you know, if I wanted to continue modeling, that I had to decide whether I wanted to be plus size or skinny. I mean, sorry.
Plus size,
what would you call it?
Freudian slip.
Yeah.
Plus size is your skinny.
Yeah, true. Sorry. Yeah, interesting. Didn't mean that, but that, you know, what my normal weight was at the time. And it was quite traumatic. I actually took a break from modeling then because it was really hard. And this is something I've probably struggled with for a really long time, that my body was a product, you know. And in those formative years as a young woman, it's really difficult to have your body image kind of picked apart, and it is a product at the end of the day. I'd walk into castings and, you know, they'd be like, oh no, you're too big, like, and literally march me out the door. Or
say that to your face?
Yeah, I'd get to a job and I'd have a couple of pimples, God forbid, I'm 18, and yeah, they would literally, like, they'd be having an argument amongst each other in German about my pickles, they're called, as I very quickly learnt in German, and kept pointing at my face. And then I get a call from my agency and it's like, oh, you have to go home, they don't want to use you. And yeah, it's, I guess, looking back, I've got goosebumps thinking about
my, like, poor little, my jaw is on the floor right now.
This was the worst one. This is the one just before I came home. I was doing a shoot and I knew that I was bigger at the time. So all the sample sizes are minute.
Yeah.
And so it was a bit of a struggle, and I was really nervous about going to this job knowing, but I was like, I'll just do this job and then I'm going home next week. It's fine. And it was just horrible. The photographer was so mean, and like, it just felt horrible. And then we stopped for lunch, and as I was eating, everyone was around there, makeup artist, photographer, like there was a whole crew of people. The photographer looks over and he goes, oh, now she's smiling because she's eating. I feel like a sick feeling thinking about it. But I was just so embarrassed. And yeah, I just, after that, I just came home. I'm getting teary now. I just needed a break from it. And so I went back to uni, because I used to go to uni for a semester and then travel somewhere. And I just said to my agency, and that's where they asked if I wanted to be plus size or if I wanted to do standard modelling. And I just needed a break and went back to uni and just completely forgot about it and removed myself from that situation until I felt ready to go back. And I slowly got back into it. But it kind of reared its head again with Miss Universe, because Miss Universe, I had quite a bit of time and I was going to the gym all the time and I felt really healthy. And I wouldn't say it was disordered then. Yep. I was just training a lot and actually really enjoying it. But then when I went to Miss Universe, we were bound to a hotel and you couldn't even go to the gym without a chaperone. And I was feeling really anxious. So when I'm anxious, I eat.
Yep.
Yeah, I started gaining weight just because we obviously couldn't leave the hotel or exercise or anything. You'd have to exercise in your room, which is really tricky. And, when I came back, I started gaining that weight again. It was almost like repeating that pattern.
Mm.
And I remember this one time I designed a swimwear label I was so proud of it. It was so incredible. But then they were like, oh, you're modeling it. You think I would know that, given being this Australian designer, yeah. this, that they're going to want me to model it. And it just sent absolute fear through me. And even to this day, I still feel traumatized by it, because I did. It was at Sydney Fashion Week, and I got up and there was just an onslaught of comments about my weight and my body, and a lot of positive comments though as well. Yeah. So I think, you know, it was important for me to look at both sides of that. And yeah. and you do get those lovely messages as well, where someone's like, you know, thank you for having a healthy body shape and yeah. getting up there. And but I think, yeah, after that time, it really brought my body image into question, and it's taken me such a long time. And I'd say it's still something that I struggle with now, but to accept my body. And I think this is something that most women, if not all, struggle with. And again, I think it's, you know, this is why I've agreed to do something like this, because I want people to feel comfortable, and I want young women to know that it's okay. Like, and that when, you know, I'm standing up there on camera every night, and I've been a swimsuit model, and I've done that, and I've hated my body to the point of just rejecting it. Like I just couldn't connect to it at all. But you know, it takes a lot of work and daily to accept your body for what it is, that it's a vessel there for you to do amazing work and for you to do amazing things. I ran a half marathon, and I think that was one of those things that really built on that, you know. So you've got to find those things that build up your confidence.
And I love that word connection to thyself, which sounds a bit woo-woo and spiritual and so forth. But if you think about it, our brain is connected to our body. You know, the reason why we have a body is so we can move, so we can action, so we can, you know, connect with other people. But it's first this connection with ourselves. And I don't know about you, when I was going through my really severe body image issues, I wanted to trade my body in. And in my mind, I was thinking, if I had a different body, my life would totally change. Everything would get better. Everything would be easier if I just looked a different way. And I never, you know, again, like you, it took me probably about 20 years to figure out that you can't trade your body in. It's like you buy a car and you got that car for your entire life. So there's two ways of driving a car. You can either treat it really nicely and polish it and shine and feed it good gasoline or petrol, or you can say, you know, I'm just going to disregard you.
And I think that's it. You saying that has really just hit a point for me, where that was my job. You know, my body was my job. So for me, if I was thinner and if I was, you know, a certain shape, it was going to get me more work. And that's that was my constant train of thought. So it was very difficult, and it took a lot of work, consistent work as well, to separate myself from that, you know. And I did still model for a while after that, but it was, I did look at my body in that sense as a product in that sort of situation. But outside of that, my body was mine, and you know, that it was, I needed to maintain it and keep it healthy for me to live my life. So I think once I made that separation and didn't sort of emotionally attached to it, which was difficult, but that's just the way that I had to look at it. And it's funny, I always say to people, because they look at models and they think that they must be the most confident person walking around, you know, like look at her, and phenomenal bodies, but they're the ones that have been sitting there. I've just given you some insight into, you know, walking into castings and the horrible things that were said. They're usually the most insecure people, because their image has been talked about since there were girls that were 14, 13 that were traveling around living on their own. And I think we also need to kind of respect everyone else's body image as well. You know, I think people are so ready to tear down someone online or pass comment about, even when people are incredibly skinny as well. Like my little sister just had the metabolism I'm like, thank you, could I have got that metabolism? But she had problems keeping on weight, and she was almost bullied at school for being anorexic, you know, when she was eating like a horse. Yeah. And she just, it goes both ways. And I think, you know, we all need to have that empathy for everyone's body image, and that people don't necessarily, that we all struggle with it at some point at least.
One of my favorite quotes is by Brené Brown, a researcher, and she said, "People are hard to hate close up, move in."
Yeah.
Meaning it's,
oh wow, it's, I love that.
It's easy to hate a stranger.
Yeah.
But if you actually go start talking to a stranger, then all of a sudden things flip. And that's why I love, you know, interviewing people, because what you see is never
what you get.
Not even, yeah, rarely, never what you get. Yeah. There's always, always something different. So I'm sure.
I love that. The lean, yeah, in. That's so good. Because I've often found, actually, when, you know, I have had these comments on social media, at the times where I have responded to them, yeah, oh, suddenly they flip around. It's not always the case, but, you know, you've connected, mm-hmm, with them and they're like, oh, sorry, well, I just thought this. And I'm like, well, that's not the case, you know, and it's quite interesting. So we just need, and in this day and age, connection is becoming more and more difficult. So, mm-hmm, that's a very
true connection.
Yeah.
So would you say, maybe to finish things off, would you say perhaps one of the things to get people to consider is to approach rather than retreat when it comes to understanding people?
100%. I think building those connections is vital. And just having that place or that space for someone else, you know, and what they might be going through, I think that's just such a special thing and so vital. And in growing that connection between everyone. So, yeah, I think I like that.
Well, Hope, I'm sure you're going to have a few people reaching out to you after this. So thank you so much for your authentic openness. That's the best way I can describe it, because this is, I would say, you know, I've seen you so many times, I've bumped into you so many times, but I'm actually almost about to cry. This is the first time I've really seen you.
Oh, thank you. Well, and thanks so much for asking me. I was probably crying in the car on the way to you.
that's crying
in the makeup room. And then I'm like, hi, Catherine.
Well, you are as beautiful on the inside as you are on the outside. And I can see why I adore your mom, as you know. And yeah, I can see, you know, why she's such a, why you've become this beautiful lady through genetics, but also through, you know, just working hard on yourself.
Well, right back at you, babe.
Aww,
love
thanks.
Seeing you in at work. When are you coming in? Sorry,
I was
no
just
hope.
There yesterday.
Oh, I missed you.
There you go. But I'll see you soon. All right.
Thank you.
I'd like to summarize what I have personally learned from Sherry Lee. For me, it shows that the only way to truly be authentic is to walk through discomfort. So I'd like to invite you to a challenge. In the next 24 hours, welcome a little bit of discomfort into your life. You know, maybe that means going grocery shopping without makeup on, or asking a friend for help. Or perhaps it's sharing a hidden part of yourself, or being silly when you're usually serious. Whatever it is, use discomfort as a cue to walk forward, not step away. Lastly, many of you have graciously asked how you can support the podcast. You know, the best way you can do this is to first subscribe, and secondly, share with a friend or family member that you believe might benefit from this information. It really is a terrific way to digitally show you care, and I got to tell you, from my heart to yours, I really appreciate it. Thanks again for your time and interest in the Secrets in the City podcast. Until next time, never forget that every day is your chance to shine.